think that's what holds so many people back. It's this, the need for perfection, isn't it? They hold off, oh, I can't.
Ego is the enemy, right? And yeah. That's the whole thing, that ego, like, as soon as you can let your ego go and allow the business to naturally and organically go its own way.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. The Entrepreneur Experiment community is open for members. We are open every month for the first week of the month, and we are opening until this Sunday. So if you're listening on Thursday when this episode comes out, you have 4 more days to join, then we'll close it down for the rest of the month before reopening in April. That all sounds great, but what is it? It is a community for listeners of the podcast, entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs, to come together and help each other. It's kind of as simple as that. And also to most importantly connect with each other. We're trying to combat this feeling of isolation that's really prevalent in entrepreneurs and even in myself during COVID and lockdown. So it's somewhere for people to come together, have a chat, do some business, learn from others, and just generally be part of a community, which is so, so important. So if you're interested, go to MrGaryFox.com. All the details are there. You can join up. It's €99 for the whole year, and that gets you everything to do with the community. Now, on with today's podcast. This one was a joy for me to do, and it's one I've had on my list for so long. Anyone that's been following me for a while, you'll know I like to work out, I like to keep fit, and I've been working with today's guests for a number of years. And I have to say, they're not just guests, they're very good friends of mine. So such could you go chat. It was literally just a chat among friends. Larry and Kate run Larry Doyle Coaching, aptly named, and they are the elite coaching duo in Ireland for online coaching. Online coaching seems like a very obvious business now in 2021, but it wasn't when they started. So we're going to find out today, how did they have this opportunity? How did they spot this gap in the market when it really wasn't that obvious? How did Kate convince Larry to move away from the old model and embrace the new? What do they see the future of fitness looking like, especially the fitness business? And how did they do it? It's quite different to normal business. And I think people haven't really got their heads around that yet for a lot of business models. And we go heavy on the model side. We go heavy on figuring out how do you transition your business from a traditional business to a new online business. It's not as simple as it sounds. It's also just a lot of fun to chat to the guys. So here's my conversation with Larry Doyle and Kate Kelly from Larry Doyle Coaching. Kate, Larry, welcome to the pod.
Gary, it's an absolute pleasure, mate.
Yeah, really delighted to be here.
There's a serious level of comfort to this one. I felt like I was just coming in to chat to two mates. That's brilliant. I'm delighted to have you guys on. Just give a quick intro as to who you are and what you guys do.
Yeah, so I suppose we are Larry Doyle Coaching in terms of an online health and fitness business. Larry is obviously the Larry Doyle part, and I am everything that goes on in the background that you don't see. So, yeah.
Kate's the gears, the cogs, the oil, the machine, and I'm just the pretty face.
And the bottom half of the iceberg, basically, that sank the Titanic. That's what you see. So, yeah.
The yin and yang of the Larry Doyle Coaching.
Yeah, and we're a couple as well, too.
Yeah, so in terms of background, we've been going out for 8 years, and in September 2017, I started to work with Larry in terms of the fitness side of it, and then I moved full-time in May 2018. So, and since then we've been, you know, entirely working together in the online health and fitness space. So
we'll start there actually, because how did you decide to work together? Because that's a big decision in a relationship.
See, it's a big combination of both, because when you get to a certain point of growth within the business that, you know, that individual can look after themselves, like especially with personal trainer. Like personal trainers are really good at dealing with people, but they're really bad at dealing with the background, the back end of the finances, the everything else, the admin, because we just want to be on the floor. That's what we do. We're chatting to people. But as we grew and as I grew more, there was a bigger demand for that. And like, you know, Kate started getting on to me. It's like, have you got all their payments up to date? Or do you even know when they're getting their payments in? And I'm like, not really, because I'm juggling too many balls and I'm spinning too many plates and, you know, doing too many hours. Because
I actually remember the exact moment and the exact day that I realized that I should be working for you, because Larry had decided that he was no longer going to do in-person training. Like, by the time he weighed up the hours, the time, the cost, he's like, you know what, I should be working entirely online. And at the time, I had a very good job, full-time hours in Dublin too. And I was in FlyFit on one morning on the treadmill doing whatever I was doing. And it just hit me and I was like, he's going to need to hire somebody else to do this. And I was thinking, well, if I just did that, then we wouldn't have to live in Dublin anymore. And then all of a sudden it just hit me. I was like, we can move back to Wexford. I was like, and I just realized, I was like, I don't need to have my, you know, good salary, because if I live in Wexford, I can reduce my costs and reduce my expenditure. And you know what? I would rather choose the lifestyle and take a pay cut. And I remember getting off the treadmill, having my shower, and I was rushing down to get in time for work at 9 o'clock. And I just rang him. I was like, I know what we're going to do. I'm going to start working for you and I'll do all the background. And then in a few months time, you know, I can just not leave. I can leave my job. But I remember I was walking down the canal. Just opposite Angelina's. I remember it now. I'll never forget it.
What did he say? More importantly.
Well, it was like, I was grateful as hell, because like I was doing some brutal hours at the time. I was doing like 100 hours plus a week. I was up at 3:30. I was in the bed by 11.
I was doing crazy
juggling. You know, I was working physically with people at like from 5 a.m. onwards in the gym. So I had to get up and do some admin at like 3:30 or do some emails at 3:30 in the morning, and then get in, get the clients going, then work straight through till 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, train myself, then straight back on the laptop till 11 o'clock that night.
Yeah, well, at the time we knew that that's not sustainable long term. It's okay to do that for 6 months, you know, as in, I suppose you were trying to move away from the in-person and drive the online. So there was a kind of an overlap between, okay, I'm going to have to, you know, grind it out for a little while. And at the same time, I could kind of see that this was going to be a growing space. Like my background was, I had been working in the insurance industry, and then I was working in kind of commercial banking, but it was like alternative lending. So it was kind of a challenger lender in the market space. And I suppose like for the last couple of years, I could see how, you know, there was different things happening in the industry in terms of how people do business, and the banks were struggling to kind of keep up with it. You know, you've got Revolut and Stripe and all these guys coming in doing a different model. And I could see the same thing happening in the fitness industry. I was thinking, well, there's going to be a different model to like the options that are there now are, you know, your pay as you go gym or your one-to-one PT. And then the other option, which was being really poorly done, was to buy a program online, which is just a set PDF with no kind of set support. So I was thinking, well, there's another, we can come up with a better version of that to go on. So that's kind of, I could kind of see everything that was going on in the industry around me was very much about to happen or could happen in the fitness space. So that was kind of how I sort of started to think about it. And then there was a period of a year, I suppose, where I was doing a little bit in the background on the admin for Larry and doing my full-time job at the same time. And as you know, you kind of, one of them winds up, you're trying to balance both, which is difficult to do. You just kind of have to do that until it's at a point where you can commit fully to the online stuff.
That was our, like the technical term, eat shit phase, because like we were, you know, hashtag grinding, but like it was a case of that I couldn't go online until the money I was making there replaced what I was making in person, because it just doesn't make any sense, right? So we had to do that and get to a point. But what we were also doing was like, you know, sacrificing our relationship as well too, because when we look at the quality of life that we're actually wanting to have, I'm like getting out of bed at 3:30, I'm getting back into it at 11 o'clock. It's like chips in the night kind of thing. You're high and by.
Yeah.
You know, we were living together, but we weren't seeing each other at all.
Yeah, but even, you know, way up the hour, like I was driving in and out to D2 from Newtown Mount Kennedy as well. So, you know, depending on the evening, like that was 2 hours, 2.5 hours of my day.
Yeah.
So there was a, you know, you factor in the commute on top of that. So yeah, there was, I think for balance to happen, and you say this a lot, there has to be a period of, you know, imbalance. So that was the period of imbalance. Let's see if this works. And yeah, my thing, like I had to replay again my salary. I was like, well, how much do I need to live, and what number do I need to hit in order to replace in order to replace that. So that was how I suppose we came up with the affiliate, or that kind of product. And it was the same, like my job, what I was working, the project I was working on in my with my past employer was, how do you offer a high volume, low value value product. You know, they had the high lending product, like, you know, a high value lending product. They wanted to get into the smaller space. Mm-hmm. So it was very much, we're doing it really well on this level. How do we now scale it on a lower value, higher volume option without increasing costs? And it was exactly the same thing that was happening with Larry. Larry was doing one-to-one high value, low volume, you know, service, but he didn't have any other alternative options. So I suppose that's what I took all of the good, all of the best parts of what he was doing. I was just, it was such an enjoyable thing to see. You see all, you know, you're helping all these people, and such a feel good factor. And I was like, God, this is, and I could just see how people were getting on really well, you know, the sense of community and all this, you know. It was just, it was really interesting because of everything else that was going on in the fitness industry. There's so much, you know, crap out there basically. And I just thought, well, how do we get this to more people? Like, more people should be involved in it. And that's kind of what we...
To give a background on that, of how we've grown, I had a waiting list of... So I had in-house hours that I was doing from 5 a.m. till kind of midday, and then with the online. So we couldn't physically fit any more people in, and I was doing like the one-to-one. We had a waiting list of about 30 to 40 people, which probably one shouldn't have allowed to get to that level of growth with the waiting list. But then Kate was like, why don't we get these people to do something while they're waiting on the waiting list? Hmm. And obviously being incredibly short-sighted and narrow-minded as a PT, as we all are, and stubborn, I'm like, cool, you do that and I'll look after the big books over here, right? And it's like, you know, let it do its thing. And Kate was like, well, we can put something together and let's email it out. And like, she was there, oh, there's like three people signed up on it. This is amazing. We'll be able to charge them 30 quid a month. And I was like, yeah, but I'm pulling in the big books over here, you know, Mr. Five Figures and whatever. And it was like, you know, get back, you know, in your box and do your thing. And then it was like, okay, now there's five, and then there's 10, and then there was 20, and then there was 30 people on it. And I'm still like, yeah, you keep playing with your little project. Next thing, we have people in other countries signing up with a lot more growth. And I'm like, this could be something, right? This could really be, let's start looking at it a lot more. You know, fast track a couple of years later with, and now we're kind of 3 years into it, people in 24 countries with, you know, 400 to 450, touching 500 people at times on a recurrent subscription basis with it. So it's grown from something that, you know, we kind of sniggered at a little bit, that Kate saw the vision with. And this is where that works so well with both of our skill sets, because, you know, I can work on the front side of it and Kate can work on the back end in terms of actually heading up the operations and, you know, bringing the service to the next level with it. And then that allowed it to grow into what it is now, you know, being a massive part of our business, you know, and serving so many more people in an incredible way.
But I think a lot of it's to do with, we've been on both sides of the coin, I suppose, because from my side, I had walked in the shoes of all those people. I have done the fitness journey in terms of trying things and failing and what worked. And I had done the one-to-one, you know, the higher end product in terms of one-to-one coaching. And then you get to a point where, well, I don't really need that anymore, but I remember thinking there was no other product in the market that would suit me personally. Mm. And so when we were putting together the option, I was like, well, all these people on the waiting list, they don't really need, you know, they need the concepts that coaching with Larry would give them, but maybe they don't need direct coaching with Larry. And I was thinking all the time, I was thinking back to my own journey and my own process, along with kind of running it by him. I'm like, well, what are the key metrics in terms of actual and you just pull it all together, and that's kind of how it developed. And, you know, people started to get results and started to get great feedback, and it's crazy now. You know, we have people reaching out to us now. We know you've changed our lives, and you've totally changed how my mindset around food happens, or I've lost 10 kilos. But they might never have contacted you. You know, they consume everything and they take it on board and they go away and they, you know, they put it into practice. And you might never hear from them until, you know, they decide to, you know what, I'm going to reach out and tell the guys, this is what I've done and this is where I am now. So it's crazy.
But it was an interesting aspect to watch Kate's transition, going from a very black and white, it either works, it doesn't, this is my Excel sheet and it adds up at the bottom or not, to dealing with people and emotions and, you know, different personality types. And, you know, in the initial phases, you know, Kate might be constructing an email to go back out
Well, you know, because I see I've got a legal background, so my I'm you know, it's yes or no, there is no kind of in between. But then the more time you spend in a kind of a commercial or dealing with emotional people or something that's kind of health and fitness, it's very, you know, grey. So it took me a while to adjust.
Kate would construct an email and I just read over it really quick just to make sure it was okay or whatever at the start. I'm like, whoa, you cannot write that to someone. Like, you're dealing with a physical human here. They've got emotions, they've got, you know, different issues. They're after coming in and telling you their life story about how, you know, they've got, you know, maybe some food relationship issues or training or body relationship dysmorphia or whatever it might be. And I was like, you can't physically write that back to somebody because it's not, you're not dealing with your old boss. It's not black and white here. Yeah. You know, I'm used to
dealing with people that are, you know, we're trying to do some sort of a commercial deal or something to do with property lending or finance, and it's very, you know, what is the answer? And the answer, you know, this is the answer. There's no two ways about it. So yeah, it was a bit of an adjustment.
But then the progression for Kate then as well, like of moving from the corporate world to, you know, the 9 to 5, which is really the 7 till 7:30 in the evening time, by the time you're out and back in, was that we had a little bit more flexibility to our lifestyle and a little bit more, you know, when you're self-employed, you can take the Thursday afternoon off or, you know, go for whatever. And, you know, when we were surrounded by in the area in near to Mount Kennedy, we went into lockdown one day for a walk and a hike, and it was one of our areas we used to visit the whole time. And Kate kind of had a bit of a breakdown that you just felt really guilty because you were taking this time off and you had, you know, friends who were working and you were chatting to the girls in AIG and stuff.
Yeah, it took me a long time to like, I went from working obviously 9 till kind of 6 in the corporate world, and I didn't stop completely. I went to 3 days a week for a period of time, kind of, and then... Yeah, so like I work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday on the commercial stuff in town, and then on Thursday and Friday would be my Larry Doyle coaching kind of time. But like that, there wasn't, that was at the very start, so there, it didn't take up a whole lot of my time then. And I was like, I've got this like spare afternoon on a Thursday, and I just totally kind of, it just takes you a period of time to adjust. I was really freaked out by it. I was like, I felt so guilty about having been comfortable with just having an afternoon off. I felt all this need to fill it with projects and, you know, self-improvement or whatever the case may be. I'd get really guilty because, you know, I'd be chatting to the girls on WhatsApp who'd be in the office. You know, they thought it was crazy that I was like, you know, leaving my job to work on this Instagram business online. And at the same time, I would go into the office again on Monday and I'd be doing commercial property management or whatever was going on. Like there was stuff to do. So it was just such a, it was night and day. Like,
I love, but it shows you how programmed we are as well, from like school, from everything. Go in at 9, leave at 5, go into work, leave at 5. Like, it shows you how programmed it was. How did you transition there? Because you talked about you did a 3 and 2, was it, with your current employer?
Yes. So it was a very interesting conversation. I went in and explained to them that I was, you know, going to move on. I absolutely love my job. I still keep in contact, you know, with them. And, you know, I explained that like I was going to give my notice and I was leaving to work with my partner in an online fitness business. And they just said to me, like, what's Instagram? They had no idea. They were just totally old school, just from a different era, you know, in terms of it. And honestly, they understood it was a lifestyle choice, and, you know, pretty sure they thought I was having a midlife crisis. But yeah, there was a couple of very important projects and transactions happening. So I agreed to stay for as long as, just until they got completed. So I think I did whatever my notice period was, full hours, and then I did an extra month or two after that in terms of 3 days. And I think that was actually really good for me as well as an adjustment, because I was very invested in the project and everything that was going on, but the kind of, because I wasn't there 2 days a week, I had to fully brief and kind of start to hand it over to somebody else. So it was really good for me to start to step back and realize that, you know, this isn't my responsibility fully anymore. And, you know, I start to step back and see how it goes without me. And it really, that was, yeah, it was very, I think it was very helpful for both sides.
There was another catalyst there as well, though, that the day we had secured our first mortgage, that, you know, we, Kate obviously needed, you know, when two people on get a mortgage, obviously one self-employed, the other employed, it's a very different scenario and case. But like when we had signed off and got everything fully dotted and crossed for the mortgage, that was the day after you went and gave your notice.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people do that.
What a coincidence.
Yeah. Look, I mean, people, you know, they draw down a car loan the day after or you know, they change jobs. It's a point in time exercise, the mortgage approval process. So that was a big part of me. I've done the hours. I have the job. I have the salary. Let's use that to get on the first step on the property ladder. That was part of it as well. And then same time we had booked like flights to go to Spain and Italy and do kind of 3-4 weeks over there. So there was also this other endpoint. So that was a nice kind of a transition as well. We took nearly a month off during summer.
A month away.
Well, yeah, we took fully advantage of the fact that, okay, now we're online. We could live anywhere in the world. Let's give this a go. So it was working while traveling, which was just a totally different experience, and it was an interesting way to approach it. Well,
we had looked at that as well too. We had rented an apartment just off Orange Square in Marbella for the month, and that was like, we were looking at, you know, where do we want to actually settle it? Like, we have a mortgage there, do we just rent out the house, do whatever, or do we want to travel and be a lot more flexible and have a lot more freedom? Went and tried the Marbella thing, and it was like, that's not for us. Move back to Wexford. You know, this was like, because we could sample it, we could try it, we could have that laptop lifestyle. It just didn't suit us. We were just like, right, let's move back home and settle down our roots.
What was it like for you though, Larry, with Kate coming in going, no, you've been doing this wrong for years? Because it sounds lovely and it sounds great, but I know you, Larry, you're quite distinct in how you think about things. What was that like coming in? From Kate's face, I already know this is going to be good.
Well, see, like we just had to set boundaries, and we had to kind of say, like, this is what I'm doing, this is what you're doing. Mm. If there is any conflict, because again, like when you've got a relationship, like if we have a row about something, me not taking the bin out, right? Example, you can't let that carry back over into the business. And it does often, right? Because, you know, I'd often say, right, is this how you would speak to the old bosses? Like, can we bring it down just a little bit? But like at the same time, I have to be, you know, a co-worker, I have to be the fiance, I have to be the, you know, colleague, I have to be the emotional support. And when we both have to wear those hats, and it's very difficult because like we're two very active minded people, and if one of us kind of switches off, the other one is kind of switched on. And you know, I'm like, oh, we'll watch a bit of Netflix, we'll do something. I was like, yeah, but I had this idea, let's go over it. I was like, well, I want to relax. You don't want to relax, you know. And you got to look at that and say, right, well, let's actually park it, write it down, we'll look at it in the morning. Or if we're out for a walk, because like we never stop talking about what's going on, you know. And there has to be a timeline where you say, right, let's actually just be a couple, or let's be the business partners, or let's look at the next project, or let's actually park that and have just, you know, a bit of kickback and a bit of downtime.
How do you do that though? Do you have work hours? Do you have like a process? What is that? Because I talked to a good few entrepreneurs, and more recently partners are starting to work together. So how do you do that?
We just do it. There is no process.
Yeah, well, you're probably more structured than I am. Yeah. I'm less structured, and I kind of, because I'm not dealing directly with clients really at any point. A lot of my stuff happens in the background. So I can kind of do it not at any time or hour, but like if I want to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and do 3 hours of work and then finish at 10 o'clock because it's a nice sunny day and, you know, have the day off or whatever. Or again, if I'm thinking, you know what, I'm going to work all day Sunday because it's snowing and raining and then I'm going to take later off. So I can kind of be flexible, which is in one way, it's great. And at the other time, it's like, you know, you're never sort of have a, because you don't have any hours, it's kind of difficult at the same time. But I think if you're, you have to be quite disciplined with yourself. And I am quite good. I'm like, okay, cool. This has to happen. And I will just, you know, plow through those things. And then I'm okay with leaving other things. I'm like, cool, I'm okay to close this right now. And I'll come back to it at 3 o'clock or whatever. You know, I can kind of be disciplined. But you're much better with structured working hours and coming to the office.
Having
the office space, I think, is critical.
I put in a rule recently, and I don't have many rules, but I just put in a rule that Kate's not allowed to work in bed with the laptop. Bed is for two things. It's for sleep and sex, and that's it. It's not for work. Right? And it's like the same thing that if you're trying to work on the kitchen table, you know, probably have an area that's conducive to more productivity as an environment. And like, this is where we converted the small room into the office, and that, you know, we kind of looked at times to say like, okay, you're in the office at this time, I'm in the office at that time, I'm recording a podcast at this time, I need it then. And at the same, like, you, I have a lot of structure with my health and fitness and my training and everything else. I've got set times where I'll, you know, kind of have my meals, have my training, have everything else. You didn't have that up till recently as well. And I kind of said, right, let's actually look at what works best then in terms of putting some structure and routine into it all. And I said, like, let's actually treat you like we would a client and say, okay, let's put that structure in because you have the freedom, you have the option. And then, you know, you end up not eating the frog, if we want to use that entrepreneurial term with it all that. You put it off, you put it off, you put it off, and it doesn't gain as much traction. So, you know, now that you've kind of put that little bit more structure to your day, we know you're, you know, working for the first couple of hours. I know that you're training at 11:30. I know that, you know, we can do X, Y, and Z in the afternoons then because we're a little bit more flexible. Or, you know, your downtimes and hobbies and activities that you love, going out to the garden, that you can have those boxed off and, you know, get out and do that as well too. But having that element of structure is key. Because if not, you can find one, you'll just bury yourself in work, or you'll do the opposite. And, you know, it mounts up then, and there is no balance. But we both are able to see when the other is under the pump a little bit more, and we can pull each other away to say, right, we're going for a walk, we're going for a break. You know, you want to come into town and we'll do the shopping, or whatever it might be, because we are pretty isolated where we are, and we can just kind of bury ourselves in work and get lost in it quite easily.
And I also, like last year, midsummer last year, I outsourced some of bookkeeping and accounting and stuff like that, which I was doing fully as well. And that's been, like, I've probably gotten a full day or day and a half back a week from that. And it's, you know, I gave it to somebody who is much more experienced, can do it in, you know, quarter of the time that it would take me. And that's literally given me a full day back at least per week. So that was key, I think, you know, outsourcing and just realizing, you know what, I'm not going to be an expert at everything. I'm good at, like, you realize what are the things that you need to actually do, because either you have the skill or you have the knowledge, and then anything else that somebody, you know, better than you can do, you know, just hand it over. So that was big. And I suppose that's exactly what's happened between me and you. Like, we did that PT business course we were running before lockdown, and like, there's a slide on that, and it has all of the jobs and all of the skills that Larry does, and then all of the jobs and all of the skills that I have, and they're completely different. So, you know, he is doing only the coaching and the training and everything that you need experience from, and then anything else to do with operational background, website, all of that, like I do, because I'm good at that. So, you know, I suppose there's very little crossover. So, you know, there's no, well, you said you were going to do that and you didn't do that. And, you know, because it's either it's on my task list or it's on his list. There's nothing really that is in the middle. So, you know, so long as you keep on top of your stuff, it works quite well in terms of a partnership. You know, one complements the other when it comes to skills and experience.
It's all evolved as well too, kind of, terms of the systems that we have in play. Like, everyone is like, that's the ultimate buzzword is systems at the minute, but like, you know, it has evolved to allow us to, like, I just don't know how I used to operate based off what we had before. I was just, I don't say a busy fool, but doing lots of work I shouldn't have needed to do, or the efficiency and the flow just wasn't there. And now we're at a point where we're doing the most volume, but with the most flow and the most efficiency that we've ever had. And it's just continuing to kind of grow month on month, and we can manage it really well because of that level of efficiency that we have.
But like any business, that's not something that you create at the outset. Like, you know, you, and I remember, like, it's the sticky tape and chewing gum version. You know, my old boss used to describe it as that. Let's just get that live as fast as we can and just test it out with a few, and then you fine tune it as it goes along. So, you know, the process that was there 12 months ago is different to the process that's there today. And even now we all constantly take feedback, and, you know, you see where can you improve, and, oh, you know, three or four people mentioned this particular issue or they had this particular question. So clearly something isn't clear if several people are having the same thing. And you know, you fine tune it. And that's, you know, that's how the process evolves. And I think that's what holds so many people back. It's this, the need for perfection, isn't it? You know, they, you know, they hold off. Oh, I can't.
Ego is the enemy, right? And yeah. That's the whole thing, that ego, like as soon as you can let your ego go and allow the business to naturally and organically go its own way, I think it moves a lot.
I always think it was substance over form. You know, a lot of people ask us, oh, are you going to launch an app for the affiliate? Are you going to do X or Y? And we've looked at, you know, things like that in the past, and it's still probably not something we're going to, well, I don't know, but like my own thing is, you know, it's the what people are getting, not how they are getting it in certain aspects. And I also think that people, you know, people are creatures of habit and they like to do business with people. They don't like to do business with technology. So, you know, there has to be, they have to feel like there's a person there or human as opposed to, oh, just go to this app and it's a bit cold and yeah. So
yeah, well,
there's pros and cons.
That's something we often get is like people writing back is like, oh, I wasn't expecting a response. I wasn't expecting an email from you. I was just expecting a PDF. It's like you actually ask us what our goals are. You actually ask us what we want and how things are going. Mm. And that's a big aspect of it. And it takes up an awful lot of our time, but that's why it's allowed us to grow where we are as well, as opposed to being the automated, you know, copy and paste kind of aspect with that. There is an aspect to that with the...
Well, there's a combination. Like there's a finite amount of human power resources. So it's like, you know, the human comes in at this point and then automation and then the human here and then automation. It's, you know, it's a bit like how they're going to drive trucks across America. You know, the majority of the journey will be done automatically and then somebody remotely will take over for the important sections. And that's how we do it. You know, you take over for the important pieces and then you let the automatic stuff happen for the relevant sections. So yeah, that's and sometimes, and then you realize, okay, actually I can automate this piece now as well because I don't need to be there anymore. And that's kind of how we evolved, I think, over the last couple of years. And still I see, you know, we're probably going to continue to do that.
It's been organic to date. Like we've barely dabbled in, you know, any marketing. And I think that's a big part of it, that anyone who comes in kind of knows what we're doing and what we're about, as opposed to, you know, people who just get served one ad and it's like, oh, well, I want to sign up to your product. And then they'll say, what is it? You know, it's when they haven't got that awareness to the actual product, that a lot of people know who we are, what we do, or if they've been referrals. It's a huge part of our collection of clients. And,
I think that's just the nature of the industry we're in terms of, like, health and fitness is something very kind of innate to the person. You have to be willing to, something has to spark you to want to change or to do something. So, you know, I think it's very much whenever they arrive at the website or they land on whatever, you know, they are there because they've already made the decision, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to join this or purchase this thing. It's not really, it's different to other products. They land on the website and they see some deal or see something and they're like, yeah, okay, now I'm going to buy it. But I think that's just because of the nature of the type of service that it is.
Well, it's a lot of, it isn't, because a lot of trainers will try sell on emotion and try sell on pain and try create pain, and they will try, oh, are you fat and unhappy? Come to me, I've got the solutions, you know, and really make you feel like a piece of crap. That's not what we do. You know, we kind of put it out there that, okay, we've got solutions for our problems and this is the people that we've helped and these are their stories, as opposed to trying to create a story and a narrative for that person to come in with. And when you're trying to sell on emotion and sell on pain, I don't think it's going to be a good experience for people when they're coming in with that much of a negative association to it, as opposed to creating something more positive. Because again, like, that's, you're selling to people and you need to know how to talk to people and how to respond to people as well too. And that's a massive part of it, to create a good experience and a good entry point for people, you know?
So what you've built now in 2021 seems super obvious now, right? We're sitting in the middle of a pandemic. Everyone has to work out from home. But 4 years ago, was it 4 years ago when you started?
Three.
This would have been pretty unusual. Like, how, I suppose, A, how did you persevere? How did you, I think you said Kate persevered with it, that's a start, but how did you build this out back 3-4 years ago? It's very obvious now. Like, we're sitting in 2021. Oh, of course, online training. It's so obvious. But back then, while it's not that long ago, it probably was.
I think that it's because people became more used to I think people became more used to following a program themselves. I think there's this whole, I actually think it followed the evolution of social media, because people are following their favorite fitness person online. Whereas, you know, before that, you went to the gym and that's where your fitness person was. You didn't have access to following your favorite, you know, gym workouts online and all that. So that kind of became, people became a lot more, I just think their own knowledge and understanding has improved. And then at the same time, the rise of the super gyms, like the FlyFit in Dublin, that there is also a catalyst. Like fitness became a lot cheaper and easier to access, you know, weight training across Ireland. Like when I was growing up, like I grew up out in Wexford. There was no going to a gym or weights. Like it was when I moved to Dublin for the first time in 2013. That's when I had access to like gym equipment for the first time. And I think that there was a kind of a catalyst in terms of people have increasing access to gyms, but they need some guidance, but they don't want to be stuck at a time, you know, that the PT can offer. So there was sort of a shift in how people were consuming fitness information and fitness services. And then I suppose I was in the FlyFits and I could see there's all these working professionals and they know what they're doing. They just need some guidance. They don't have the time or the energy to commit to, you know, PT four times a week at 6:45 a.m. They want to be able to go at a time when suits them, but they want good quality product. So that's kind of, it was just a timing in the market and getting the right product at the right price point. And it was kind of growing your social media. You were getting a lot of results. And I think it's the fact that it's kind of two things. The first thing is years experience. So Larry had all the experience and all the results, and he had a social media following, that kind of combination. There wasn't a huge amount of guys who had so much more experience and had the social media following. A lot of the guys with the experience probably didn't go down the social media route as hard. And then any of the guys with lots of following or social media probably didn't have the experience or the results. So there was kind of a combination of things that happened. And it just worked.
There's several aspects to it now, I think. And it's, I was just thinking about it there now, and kind of a lot of it, that personal training was very intimidating over the last few years for people. And like that, if you look at it, it was all tits and ass and huge jacked guys and bodybuilders. And, you know, this was the whole, you know, cause a lot of normal people won't portray themselves on social media. They won't put up their images. They won't put up they don't have the body confidence. So like the whole thing was just orientated around, you have to be big, huge and jacked and strong. And a lot of people just didn't want to interact with that side of it. And then when you can, like a lot of people don't want to be seen to be doing personal training in person as well too, especially in some of the bigger gyms. And there is an aspect to that. A lot of people just want to go in and get their headphones on and just kind of do their own thing. And when you can provide that as an alternative solution to, you know, a less intimidating side to something that's very intimidating, that breaks down the barriers of that. And once you can reduce that friction point, and once you can create an ease of access to it, because it's something that like personal training, it's like good personal training is expensive. I mean, there's still always the quote that bad personal training is even more expensive in the long run. But like good personal training is very expensive. And a lot of people just don't have £100 an hour, you know, four times a week to give a trainer. They don't have, you know, 14, 15, 1600 quid a month to part with. And that's kind of what you're looking at. And if you can create that access point to a very high quality product for a lower price as well, and reduce the friction and the intimidation and everything else, you've got a recipe for something that's very successful, because there is only that 0.1% of the demographic can really actually afford personal training consistently long-term as well. And if you can provide solutions for that at a lower cost, that's very high value. It's something that allows it to grow really, really well and to become something that's very different. And that's kind of what we looked at with that. And then it just grew into something, and it kind of just organically went, you know. And it's like,
was there a point, Larry, where you were like, oh, what I've been doing for the last 10 years is going to fundamentally change?
It's evolved so many times. Like when I'm 16 years in the industry now. Like, we have seen every crazy diet, every crazy fad, every crazy evolution in terms of classes, in terms of online, offline. It's been a crazy, crazy industry in terms of how many different U-turns. I don't think there's another industry that has as many U-turns and 180s as the fitness industry has. And it's kind of finding its own space there now. But over that time frame, no, like, you couldn't foresee any of this. And, like, you know, a lot of people say, no, we're really lucky that we had all this established there before COVID happened. But, like, you know, we were doing this and reaching a lot of people well before it. You know, we kind of had that waiting list even before I had a social media following, you know, because it was kind of word of mouth. And, like, that's where, like, your name has to carry so much weight with it, because it is, like, social proof. It is the value of it. And that's why I insisted on keeping Larry Doyle in the name of Larry Doyle Coaching. It's a pain in the ass when you're writing it out every time in your email address or whatever, but we need to shorten that perhaps. But, like, that my name carries that reputation with it, and that if someone has a bad experience with the affiliate, it's not too bad because who's the affiliate? But, like, if they have a bad experience with Larry Doyle, that's a very big thing, you know. And I'm very conscious of that they're getting a good experience all the time, because, you know, it's kind of money in my name as such. You know, that's kind of where we kept that as a brand. And it's been a critical part to it, I think, as well, for the growth and the aspect of it. But you can't foresee, you know, where any of this was going to go or how it was going to evolve or anything. But
I think that it dawned on you, because we did, when we moved back to Wexford, we did open the gym here. Like, we invested, you know, rented a premises and set up a gym for personal training. And I think that you kind of realized then, after, you know, a year of that, God, in-person training is very different to how it was, you know, 5-6 years ago. And it's going to be very different going forward. And, you know, it wasn't really the same in terms of, like, from our, like, it's different when you're in there doing the personal training, because you're getting something back in terms of the interaction, the communication. If you're doing it as an investment and a business, it's very different experience. So that kind of probably is a point where it dawned on you a little bit that it was...
We had looked at that. We had dropped a deposit on a premises that was about 5 or 6 times bigger than the one that we were currently in. And we were going to set that up. This was at the start. This was probably April in 20. And we were going to look at investing a lot of money into it and kind of growing a huge space.
We saw the opportunity of the first lockdown. We were thinking, you know what, we could move the current gym from where we are to this bigger space. Why don't we do that? And and we actually did put down a deposit, and in the end, we pulled the plug, and I said, you know what, that deposit was probably the best money I ever spent, even though it cost me this much money. We walked away in the end, and it was the right move, because, you know, we were both
chatting over breakfast one morning. I was like, do you really want to be back in the gym at 5 o'clock every single morning doing the 100 hours a week again? Because that, if you're starting any new business, regardless of how well it's established, it doesn't just open the doors and, you know, build and they will come all of a sudden. Like, you still have to put in all the work and have, again, if your name is over the door, it carries that reputation that you have to be in there and make sure it's been upheld. And
that was another big contest, because we were trying to decide what name do we put over the door. Like, I was trying to go down the whole Wexford doesn't have a commercial super gym, let's just do that. And he was like, no, Larry Doyle Coaching. I was like, no, let's just, you know, call it whatever gym, like, doesn't have to be your name. We don't even have to, we can just promote it from a marketing. I was trying to say, you know, just come in from a marketing perspective as opposed to an operational perspective. And again, that's just, it can be very different to, it's much easier to do it, you know, in an industry, say, for example, I don't know, like the other alternative is like, well, let's set up a coffee shop or something instead. Like, that's something that we would, that would make more sense, you know, because we can't operationally run it because we don't know how to do that. We have to get somebody else, which could be the marketing side. And we were trying to get that into the headspace for the gym. But in the end, we just...
You know, that's the one thing I'm grateful for with lockdown number two, is like, that just put an absolute fork in that for us, and we didn't.
Yeah, I'd say if the lockdown hadn't happened, we probably would have done that. And we would have been locked into a much more... I mean, that was a serious lease. It was probably double the rent. So it would have been a much more, you know, we would have been locked in with less freedom than what we have now. Definitely.
And obviously that's worked out in our favor now, because it's like, we saw a lot of growth in the initial phases of lockdown with the online, because there was a lot of trainers just left their clients in the lurch, and they just stepped away. It's like, oh, well, I've no facility to work from, I can't do anything online. and I'll see you after lockdown. And we're like, thanks a million, because, you know, we've seen like a 30% increase in June, I think it was.
See, I think it was a lot of people who had either follow you on Instagram or had seen, you know, them thinking, oh, I'm going to try that online thing sometime, but they were content in their existing relationship and they were habits. And then all of a sudden when lockdown happened and that stopped, they're like, okay, well, now's a good time. I'm actually going to try this online thing. So there was a lot of new people who came along and, you know, picked it up to try it out. But yeah, there was an awful lot of people who, you know, just didn't follow up with their clients or didn't, you know, give them an option. And they obviously wanted to, you know, they wanted to find somewhere new to, you know, continue with their fitness. So yeah, we were kind of one of the industries that I suppose saw an uptick.
But I guess when you're first to market with something like that as well too, it's so important that you're kind of seen as being the one in the space, and not that we're trying to be, but it just was, because we were kind of the first in that space. There was one or two others doing it, and there's been a lot have tried to kind of replicate it, but it's been forced. And it needs to be that little bit more organic as well too. So
it's quite interesting. You get a lot of PTs who join the affiliate every month to just basically try and see how it's done. And
copy and paste.
That's a huge compliment. You know, they say imitation is the greatest form of flattery. So I'm like, you know, what do you do?
You can copy as much of it, but it still comes back to the root of it, that you have to have that kind of grow for what you're doing. Mm. You know what I mean? And that is something, and it sounds so cheesy and cliche, but like, we genuinely love what we do. And like, you know, again, you had one of those little mini breakdowns at the start where, you know, where Kate kind of came full circle and said, well, you know, I'm not, dealing with robots and whatever. And, you know, we started realizing that you're genuinely making a difference. And there was one email that came in and we
request feedback at various touch points with clients. So I think it's about 1-4. We always, you know, tell us how you're getting on. Is there anything we can do better? And I remember my name came up on it's always, oh, Larry has really helped me improve this. And then it was, oh, and Kate wrote this thing one day about stress management or about something. And it just really hit home with me, and I, you know, and I quit my job and I changed my life, and now I'm so much happier. And I remember reading, and there was my name started appearing on these feedback forms. I was like, Larry, look, I was like, I did this. I was just totally, I cried, I think, on the first day, like, that I read it. I was like, oh, look at this, because I was used to doing stuff like, okay, yeah, we got this deal over the line and it's, you know, 50 grand towards my bonus, or it's 50 grand towards my target for this year.
Yeah.
Boom, go me. But there was never
cold and heartless. But this is like, you've got that emotional connection with
people. Oh my God, you're making a difference to somebody's, you know, life and family and how they view the world. So it was just, yeah, it was interesting. And it's a bit, it's just exciting. It's nice. Like, it's just a real feel good factor. You know, it's just different industry.
And like, we get feedback like that all the time, and that's not trying to blow our own horn, but like, you do kind of get used to it, but it's still at the same time, it's a different person each time. And they're saying like, you've changed my life, or now I have a better relationship with my food, or I can actually have food with my family and my kids and my partner now. And, you know, I'm enjoying life, I'm enjoying training. And, you know, where technically we are personal trainers, we just, you know, it's technically food and sets and reps and whatever, but you have such a greater impact on the psychological as well as the physiological with people, and you can really give people a lot of value back to their lives. And, you know,
it just helps you, keeps you motivated and says, you know what, yeah, I'm going to get up tomorrow and I'm going to do this, because I know that in 3 or 4 months time, you know, this person will hopefully feel what the ones that come before them have felt or got to. So yeah, it just keeps you motivated to stay going. And you know, you realize that you're doing no harm effectively. You know, you're helping people and you're improving the, you know, giving them a new focus. And I think particularly with lockdown, it's kind of, people need something. And I think the online community, they don't realize how much they need it until they actually come into it. And it's probably the same with you in your community. People don't realize the value of it until they start to participate, or they start to see, oh look, this is handy, I can reach out. And, you know, people, it depends on their social circle, they might not have you know, either people in their household or people that they talk to in their normal everyday who will support them in that space. So when they join something, you know, like what we offer, or like what you offer, you have a group of like-minded people who can kind of share those views and supports, and they also have similar issues and problems, and you know, they don't have to voice their own problem because somebody else might voice it and they have the same problem, and then they see the answer and the solution. So it's kind of, it's less intimidating as well. They're able to absorb it and, you know, go off and put it into practice. So yeah, people kind of get a lot from that.
You can be seen to be the black sheep if you're trying to make a difference in your health and fitness. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, here comes Gary with his lunchbox of fucking chicken and broccoli again, you know, ages. But like that, when you don't have that element of support, you can feel really alienated. And if you can provide that community and that aspect of the missing link in someone's life, because like that's what the Starbucks model was originally, right, was to be the third place. That's what the gym became if you didn't have Starbucks, because you've got work, you've got home, and you've got the third place, which for a lot of people is the gym. And now they obviously don't have that. They don't even have work. They've got home, which is work and home and school and gym. And, you know, if you can provide that outlet and that kind of support and that community aspect to it for people, it's incredibly valuable, because they may not have that support from even, you know, the most close people to them. You know?
And from our like model, I had a lot of people who were then, you know what, I really like being part of the community. I don't want training anymore. Can I just stay part of the community?
That's what a compliment.
We actually offer that now. That developed itself. I'm like, yeah, okay. And I just reduce your subscription to this much per month, and you can just stay part of the people. They just want to feel part of it, and they plug in, and they might not interact every week, but now and again they will, or they'll read something, and, you know, and they just find it like it's a little positive space for them. And, you know, your phone, the news, everything. And when you speak to people, it can all be quite negative in terms of what's going on. Whereas this is a cool, well, I'm going to log into the Facebook group and I'll know there'll be some form of positive, upbeat recipe, something, a picture of something. And you know, they get a bit of an uplift from that being part of it.
You find your tribe. I have two questions for you before we finish. One for you, Kate, and one for you, Larry. Kate, I'll start with you in terms of, you've built a very, very successful online business. What are the core ingredients, I suppose, to starting? This is where a lot of people are now. A lot of people are where you guys were 5-6 years ago. They were possibly doing a physical business, or they were doing an in-person business. What are the core things you've learned over the last 4 years for building a successful online business?
Yeah, I think the first thing is probably where you put technology. I think people get very caught up and go down a rabbit hole in terms of, oh, I need to have the best technical app, piece of software. You know, I want to have, they kind of forget that it's kind of substance over form. What are you trying to achieve? Like, I think the fundamental, and that's like where I came from and what I was doing was operations. How do I get from A to D in the least amount of steps with the least amount of friction to the customer as possible? So I think that sometimes technology can actually create more friction than if you were to do it, you know, in something more, like something simple. So I think that the first thing is, you know, don't get caught up with fancy technology and apps. Like, think about, what are you trying to achieve? What are you trying to deliver to the customer? How do you want to deliver it? How are they going to use it and interact? What is the easiest for them to fit into their life? And then decide kind of where you put the technology and where you put the human resource aspect. And, you know, I think that's probably something that we learned a lot. Like in the business I was in beforehand, we put technology at a certain point and it was heavily invested in, and it probably wasn't utilized. It should have been put at a different aspect in the business. That was, you know, something that was learned afterwards. And that's sort of something that we've learned on the go in terms of our stuff. I'm like, well, where do I put technology and where do I put the human? And then the other thing is, yeah, I suppose not from a sales perspective, but when somebody decides, yeah, I want your product in my life, it's like, let them, give them a way, I suppose, to factor in budget and payment. So like, we only sell an ongoing subscription service. So when I looked around at other fitness professionals or other online businesses, like the next, or everybody else seems to have an 8-week or a 12-week plan. You go on and you purchase this one-time purchase. So, and that's kind of pretty common across the fields. There was very few other fitness businesses that were offering an online recurring subscription piece, because then I would rely on this myself. People don't like making decisions. I am very, not that I'm indecisive, but I'm like, stuff like, for me, like if I could have an online subscription service for toilet paper, like I'm going to need that every single month. Like I don't want to have to remember to buy it when I'm in the supermarket. Can I just like pay somebody that will send me this much every single month and this is the money, like go, you know, and it's the same. And so from a health and fitness perspective, I was like, well, people will want training and health advice in their life. So let's just give them an easy way for, because when they can budget, it's easy to, you know, continue. And you're now part of their monthly spend. Whereas if it's, oh, it's going to be $600 or 600 euros for, you know, this 6 weeks coaching plan. And then all of a sudden in another 6 weeks time, you have to try and convince them to part with another 600 euros. Whereas if you decide from the outset, right, it's going to be 100 euros a month and you're going to do it for as long as it takes. So I think that, yeah, the other thing is just, you know, understanding how people work when they have to try and make a decision about something every time, you know, they put it off, or, yeah, you know, it depends on the timing when you hit them. So it's like, cool, if they've decided I'm going to spend this money and I'm going to put it into my weekly or my monthly spend, that's, you know, I think that was something that we definitely learned along the way, the recurring piece. And then I don't know about a third.
I think that's super advice. I've chatted to an e-commerce entrepreneur before and he's like, I love my business, but every morning I wake up and I have to find new customers. Because what they sold was a one-off thing. So what you said there is super advice. It's just think about where you're finding your customers and how are you going to keep them engaged with you.
If you have to empty the bin every 8 weeks and then try and refill it, that's hard. It depends.
But also I think you have to remember as well from the industry that we're in, I think it's very important that people understand that fitness is not something you can just, like, you can't just buy a 12-week plan and you're going to get to your end goal and get your results in 12 weeks. Like, I think that that's the number one thing that was missing, that people had this thing, I'm going to buy this and I'm going to get there. Like, unfortunately, that's not the case. And that's why we do the monthly thing. I'm like, well, it might take you 6 months. It might take somebody else 18 months. It might take someone else 3 months, you know, it, because there's so many different variables. So that's why it's like, this is what will work. It might, you know, and that's, you know, you're kind of being upfront and you're being honest with the customer at the outset. It's like, this is what you need. I think it's going to take you 8 months to get where you want to go, or I think it's going to, you can kind of manage their expectations and then all of a sudden they're convinced. Whereas if you have open your website, 6 week plan, 8 week plan, 12 week plan, all you're telling the customer is that our relationship is going to end in 8 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, so that to me was definitely something that we did kind of differently or learnt.
See, that would go against our ethos as well of churn and burn after every 8 weeks, because we are about the sustainable longevity approach. And that's not just as an upsell with business, that it's actually to give people the lifelong tools and skills that they need to develop. And, you know, it works well, obviously, with a subscription model, but like, you can't put a timeline on that if, you know, you go 10 miles into the woods, you got to come 10 miles back out. It's not an 8 week thing, you know, and it's really important.
And then I think probably the last thing, or the number one thing, is also just that, like, don't be afraid to kind of like back yourself and take risks. And the one thing I always remember is, or the sentence I always used to hate was, just because, oh sorry, it's always been done this way, that does not mean that it's the only way to do it. And that has continued through any of the jobs that I have ever done. So like, whenever I'm looking at a problem or looking at an issue, or how do we do this or how do we do that, what's the best way, like, just because that's how everybody else does it does not mean that it's the only way to do it. You know, so I would always be kind of, you know, just open-minded in terms of taking risks and trying something new. And like, it doesn't cost, like, try it out. Like, you know, you don't have to go out and splash it all over your social media tomorrow. It's like, okay, cool, I'm going to try this out with 3 or 4 customers who inquire and see how it goes and if it works, you know. And that's, you know, so yeah, it's constantly just trying new things. And yeah, don't be afraid to sort of be a bit different, I suppose.
That's super advice. I often drop stuff into the pod and I see if anyone writes back about it. And if they do, I do more of it. And if they don't, I never mention it again. It's because it doesn't matter. Like, people get so obsessed about, like, oh, you know, I have to do this and I have to do that, and it's a big commitment, and put it off. Just try it and learn from it. Obviously, if you make a balls of it, learn from it. Larry, talk to me about, you know, lockdown is a very stressful time for people and stuff like that, and especially entrepreneurs. A lot of entrepreneurs I talk to are struggling with, like, routine and productivity. How do you structure your day and your week because you're a very disciplined dude. I think we could learn a lot from you. What does your day and week look like?
When you're talking about people being stressed, I'm probably the opposite. If I was any more laid back, I'd be horizontal.
I stress enough for both of us. That's my role in the relationship.
So the biggest thing is to forecast. And if you can, you know, if you can actually look at that and predict what's there, or kind of have that plan B. I'm a big proponent of the productivity planner, Brendan Bouchard's productivity planner. And on his thing, I have it here, I'll literally open it now. Point number 4 every day on his morning mindset is a situation that might stress me out or trip me up today. It could be. And then the next line is, and the best way, and the way my best self would deal with this is.
Okay.
So if I can forecast, and usually what it is for me, if I'm recording some videos for clients, that, you know, if the video goes wrong and I'm after, you know, doing a 20-minute video explaining something to them and it doesn't record like it's happened before, how do I respond to that? So I've already planned out that situation in my head. I know the worst case scenario, but I also know that automatically I've written that down already. And I know how to go into my fail-safe mode, that I know how to objectively deal with that, of what I need to do. I need to run a test before I start recording.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
And if I can forecast that, if I can plan the shit, because we all go in kind of blind, like, oh, I hope today goes well. Like, well, what? Because shit's going to happen. Something's going to, like, you're going to get a curveball. The power's going to cut. The Wi-Fi's going to drop.
The dog is going to bark in the middle of your podcast recording.
Thanks, Kate. Right? Thanks for flagging that up there. Happens like every week, every single week.
This is it. If we can forecast around that and have that plan B, you know, because there's this, never make a plan B. You just focus on plan A. Well, all this nonsense.
Burn the boats, all that rubbish. Yeah.
Bollocks. It's like, you know, just actually put the plan in and then like have plan B and have all the way to plan Z if you need, because, you know, it is going, you are going to get curveballs, but it's having that structure. And I'll, you know, promote this planner loads. I only use it on my really busy days.
Okay.
And I'll plan in everything I need to do and I'll know where I am and what I'm doing on any day to day. I've kind of got the wardrobe effect of having the same clothes all the time, that it's removing decision paralysis. I'll pretty much have the same foods at the same times. I'll train at the same time. And if you do...
Because people don't like making decisions. Yeah. They want habit and they want the same.
We think we want all the freedom, but we actually want discipline. Isn't that right, Larry?
Yeah, well, like, discipline equals freedom, right?
Exactly.
I have that old Jocko quote everywhere, and it's like that. If I can get the work done, it's done, it's out of the way. But if I can reduce the friction on the way to it, and if I can reduce the decision paralysis, and if I do consistent things, I'm going to have consistent responses. If I do erratic things, I'm going to have erratic responses.
Yeah.
So if I'm erratic with my wake and sleep times, if I'm erratic with my food times, if I'm erratic with my training, if I'm erratic with my email responses, if I'm out of sync with everything else, why would I expect consistent things as a result or an outcome, right? Mm. And it's like, I'm not trying to say you have to be military precision and have an alarm set for everything, but have some form of structure. And if you can have that structure, because like, it is a lonely world when you're doing the laptop lifestyle, and people don't realize that. When I went purely online, I had to leave the apartment because it was empty, and I'd go down to the barista in the coffee shop and have a chat just for 20 minutes because I was going out of my mind. But it's having that structure and routine to the day that I can actually have that in, or factor in phone calls to friends, or factor in whatever it may be. And like that, I also factor in my downtime into my day. You know, people kind of think of downtime as an afterthought.
Yeah.
I'll factor in a walk. I'll factor in my training session. I'll factor in some hobbies and activities that I want to do.
The dog or whatever, yeah.
And I'll actually factor that in and keep it as part of my routine instead of an afterthought or as a reward if I get the work done later on, and most likely end up just bottling out in your day. But once you can have that factored in, it gives you very consistent responses, and it gives you very consistent energy. It gives you very consistent mood, but it also gives you very consistent results with what you're doing, because ultimately you need to be results oriented with the work you're doing. And if you're not getting the outcome you want, you need to change the input to some degree, right? But at the same time, you can't just juggle it every other day and just do inconsistent things again, because you're going to get inconsistent responses. So it is like, that's a really long-winded way of just structure your goddamn day and have some discipline and have some structure to say that I'm doing the work from X to now. It's the same as what we've done for Kate, to say, get out of bed, actually go into the office, be in a productive environment, have your work set out, have your time set out for everything else. And then once you get it done, play as much as you want. And, you know, that's a big, big part of it, to actually have both of that in work and play, and play and work, and vice versa, you know?
That's incredible advice. I think a lot of people look at entrepreneurs like yourself and like, oh my God, I wish I could just like work when I wanted. I wish I could just work from a laptop. I wish I could just work from home. They don't see that other side of things. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, especially in the start, struggle to figure out, wait, I'm working way more than I was, and now I'm all over the place, and now I'm stressed out. So that's super advice. Like, and any great entrepreneur I talk to has that discipline. They have a very set structure in what they do.
I did a consult call with somebody recently, and he asked me, what about like time off and holidays? And I kind of said, well, there's a cost to having such flexibility. Like, I don't have, like, if we go on holidays or go for a weekend away, my laptop comes with me. You know, you have to have, what is the cost, or what would you be willing, you know, what is the cost to you to be able to work the hours of flexibility that you work? And it is that there is no leaving it at the door the same as you would if you worked for somebody else. You know, you just don't have that anymore. So, and he kind of agreed. He was like, yeah, okay, I understand now. Like, that's what I'm kind of...
Well, the book stops with you. Yeah. You're ultimately fully responsible for everything that happens within the business, because it's your business. Mm-hmm. And you can't point the finger at someone else. You can't say, well, they didn't do the work. It's like literally just down to you. And that's a pure example of it, that, you know, you've got to do the work. And again, that, to come back to the Jocko quote, discipline equals freedom on it. And that, you know, you need to have that discipline to have the freedom, and vice versa.
Brilliant. Yeah. Is there a book you guys would recommend in terms of, has an impact on you professionally or personally?
How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think it's fantastic. I think everyone should dig into that. I actually need to revisit it again. That every time you do, you kind of, you pick up one piece and you forget 10 others from it all the time. But I think that's a fantastic read. I'm not so into the rest of the self-development books, because I think everyone wastes an absolute ton of time on self-development and personal development, that they just jump from one to the other and they actually don't apply too much of it. But that's definitely one for me.
The two that I think have had the most impact on me is that Dale Carnegie, the stress, how to be less stressed and enjoy life more, or something. I'll get to the actual name. It's a pink book. It's really old, but that is just fantastic, because I'm naturally I was an underwriter in insurance for a couple of years, so I am naturally immediately risk. How I look at life. So I have already gone through the most immediate risk, and the next, and the next, and the next, all the way to the least likely. And I weigh, so that's how I approach everything. Whereas that book just helps me to, cool, I accept this could potentially happen. And if it does happen, then I am going, this is going to be my response.
Okay.
And I accept that fact, and then I just move on. But that was a great book. And I also enjoyed Coffee with Dan's book, The Little Red One, is it called Getting Shit Done? Mm. I thought that was fantastic. I actually read that, and I launched the affiliate about 2 weeks after I finished it. I just read it, and there was just things in it that just, it just clicked. I was like, you know what? He's dead right. I'm just going to do this right
now. There's nothing better. The right book at the right time changes everything. Where can people learn a bit more about yourselves and about the affiliate program?
I guess the website's going to be the best, larrydoylecoaching.ie.
Yep.
Or my IG.
And as an example, larrydoylecoaching.ie, we sell two things. That's it. Because people don't like making too many decisions, which is a good example of what we spoke about earlier. Keep it simple.
And my IG is probably another place. So it's larry_doyle_coaching.
You'll find loads of information on the website, and there's lots of articles and links to other podcasts and, you know, different places where you can read or hear more about it.
I'm pretty active in the DMs. Like, I will always respond to people's DMs if they want to get in and get, like, that's where I find a lot of, like, create an actual human contact and conversation and open up some dialogue with people. It's fantastic as an entrepreneur to be able to actually see what people really want and need, and how to fix their problems and issues with it. So if anyone wants to shoot me a DM, I'm always open for a chat there too.
And actually, I have recently started to do a small bit of consulting on the side with other businesses which want to move into the online space, because I suppose I realize that I've got a lot of experience and background in terms of how you do this operationally. Now, not particularly with other fitness businesses. I'm speaking to kind of everybody. So so you can get me on katekelly.ie. I set up a small website recently. So you can reach out to me on email there or on LinkedIn, and I will see if I can help.
Brilliant. I've been banging that drum for the last 9 months. So I was happy you gave that a plug, because I was going to have to come back in and plug it after you. Listen, thank you so much, Larry. Thank you so much, Kate.
Gary, appreciate your time.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks very much, Gary.
Well, if you made it to the end, you obviously enjoyed that chat with Larry and Kate. The guys are just superb. They're a wealth of knowledge. Go check out Larry's website and also his podcast, the Gen Pop Podcast. It is superb. It sickens me how good it is, and it's still so early in its run. Major jealousy there. It's a super podcast. It breaks down fitness issues, sometimes that can be complex, breaks it down to simple, everyday language that you and me can understand. It is excellent. I'll be back next Monday for the Idea Lab. Until then, have a great week.